Over coming to you live from the downtown east side of Vancouver. Hello everyone and welcome to Talk Recovery Radio. We're right now on Facebook Live and on CFRO 100.5 FM Co-op Radio. Thanks very much, Co-op Radio, for letting us take an hour to talk about recovery right here in one of Vancouver's neighborhoods where there's unfortunately a lot of drug use. And we are powered by New West Recovery, which is Last Door Recovery Center in Westminster House. So a big shout out to them for letting us do an hour-long show on recovery. And if you like what you hear and want to be part of our show, you can go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/talkrecoveryvancouver. And we are on iTunes and SoundCloud and podcasts and everything else. So that's all at talkrecoveryradio.com. And we're now like way past 4 years of shows coming to you weekly every Thursday. And thanks to all our listeners and to everyone that supports our radio show. And we usually like to start the show off with some hot topics. And we've got a couple for today. Hello, everyone.
Oh, no, yes.
Oh, shoot. My phone's doing Facebook Live, so I can't pull it up. But anyway, there's this awesome grassroots organization in Washington. And their website is called, what's it called? Opioidadvocates.org, something like that. I'll post it on the Facebook page. Somebody sent it to me earlier today, and you know what, we really need to be careful. Darren, you're not, I haven't had a chance to talk to you about this, but I talked to Francis about it.
I'll be careful.
It's unbelievable. So here is this, you know, this this organization that's it's called Advocates for Opioids, and it's all about medication therapy, and it's talking about how it's advocates, grassroots. There's a tragedy in the United States. Every 8 minutes, somebody dies in the United States. I think it's 175 people every day, and it is a tragedy. And so you're reading it, and you're getting pulled into this, like, oh, I'm going to make a picket sign, and then all of a sudden, it's like this line that says, we need to stop this tragedy with recovery medication. And then the next one, and there's all this like eye candy, like, you know, people on recovery medication don't die. People on recovery medication have better birth success rates. People on recovery medication do better in treatment, which I don't even know what that means. Because really, when you break that down, like, what does that even mean? What happens after 7 months? And what's treatment? And is it residential treatment? Is it outpatient treatment? Is it yoga therapy on Suboxone? And then it talks about the medication. And then there's a picture of the White House, and so they pull you with the people dying. And I mean, I know a lot of people that organize grassroots organizations. Like, I chair a couple of committees that don't really have big budgets, and it's pretty hard to create websites that are really cool. And then I also have the ability that I work for other things where there's budgets to create some pretty cool websites. This isn't a grassroots operation website. Like, this website is just like got everything perfect, the colors, the text, the fonts, the logos, it's just like a good song, right? And you just know it's Big Pharma, you know what I mean? Like, it's just changing the world. Their goal is to change the world. The conversation about recovery. And I don't know, we really got to be careful. Like, is Big Pharma going to save us from the overdose crisis? Like, I mean, It's crazy.
Is that a loaded question?
That is. I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy. Am I crazy? Like, should I? So at the end of it, at the bottom, you can sign up to be an advocate for opioids, recovery medication, whatever they're calling it. And when you click on it, this window opens up, and it's a petition letter that goes to somebody in the White House, and it says, "I support equal and quick access to opioid medication, recovery medication," something like that. It doesn't say treatment, doesn't say recovery. Like, I mean, they've been giving out methadone and Suboxone for decades in the United States. I don't know anybody in the States that hasn't had been able to get access to assisted medication. I mean...
It sounds like, of course. Like, I hear that, and it's like, of course. Like, of course they're going to take advantage.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Especially the social media markets that they know exactly who they can, you know, send their message to and market to. And yeah, I mean, there's enough people dying out there without you know, knowing any other access to treatment or to changing their lives other than medication. I mean, it's a pretty smart spin on words, I think. Recovery medication?
And somebody got a bonus.
That was somebody, good.
You know that balloon chart in that boardroom? They must have been like, oh, that's it.
Ding, ding, ding.
Yeah. That's the next Big Mac.
Yeah.
You know, and it's
cool, because they're now able to put, like, you know, methadone and Suboxone in the same, under the same title as recovery.
Years ago, it was, you're in recovery when you say it's your pathway to recovery. Now, like, I mean, they're just really, really sneaky. You know, we've got a couple more minutes for our Hot Topics part, and then we want to go into our first guest. Another great news, Darren doesn't know this, and hello, everybody, but we are able to go to Portugal in June. Wow. You know, we talk about Portugal a lot. We're going to do some conversations with the actual Commission of Drug Dissuasion that's in Portugal. So stay tuned to Talk Recovery Radio. But yeah, I'm going to Portugal and going to be doing some filming over there. I want to get right to the, you know, the grassroots, like what's going on in Portugal, like what is happening over there, and, you know, is it really all just decrim or is there more to it? So
that's awesome.
So I'm really excited about that. Kind of got the green light a couple of days ago, so I'm still excited about it, and the brain's just going a million miles a minute, and so yeah, I'm just super excited about that. And if you want to know more about that, you know, stay tuned to our show, and more will be revealed. So we start the show off every week with a guest that talks about an awesome topic. This week we're going to be talking about food addiction and recovery. Frances Stone starts us off. And Frances, who do we got in studio today on our show?
I'm super excited to have Susan Stanfield in the studio today. Susan is a mutual friend, and she's the founder and creative director of Gojigo, an animal-free food activist, and she's currently developing a TV series called Edible Planet. Welcome to the show, Susan.
Thank you for having me. What an honor.
Yeah, I'm super excited. There's so much information. You are just always a wealth of information, and I definitely encourage people to follow Susan on Facebook, because she's always putting posts out about health and diet and just everything. Not diet in the sense of weight loss, but diet in the sense of eating healthy for energy and depression and anxiety, and the way that you're able to connect food to self.
Yeah, well, it's the biggest thing we do every day, and there's 7.5 billion of us on the planet, and we all do it 3 times a day, right? So it's a 24 billion a day choice. It's the biggest thing in the world. It's the biggest industry. It's the biggest sector. So I was very excited to discover food as my kind of career now, because it's so big and it's so rich. There's so many things to do and have impact in people's lives.
So what began your own personal health awakening?
Well, my awakening happened after a 2-year depression. That was when I kind of had an awakening, and I remember the moment it ended. I was sitting in the sunshine. But my food journey started when I was a teenager, 13 pretty much. I got bulimia, and I had it for 10 years. And I don't think I spoke about it until I was in my early 30s. So with any kind of addiction, and you know, you guys are the experts, there's shame and secrecy, and a lot of girls probably had it at that time, but nobody talked about it. Nobody talked about it back then, right? And so that's really when it started. But coming out of my depression, I ate my way out in the produce section of Capers Grocery Store on West 4th, and that's when my awakening happened.
Interesting. I love that. And so that has led to just learning so much about food and even its connection with bulimia. I know that a big part of that with my clients is to eat healthy in a way where they don't have the desire to binge or purge. So is that where the healthy eating came in? Because some people will think that it just goes away, but I've found often that it will, if somebody chooses to eat in a healthy way, then it avoids the bulimia. Does that make sense?
Yeah, well, I always compare food to money. Okay, so there's two things that people do really badly in life, and that's save money or stay out of debt and eat. And they're very similar. So when somebody has really healthy food habits, it's the result of something emotionally. If somebody has really healthy financial habits, it's the result of something, healthy choices. A person is making healthy choices with money. So my belief is probably 80% of it is emotional well-being. And a lot of people do not have emotional well-being anymore. And then say 20 or maybe 30% of it is kind of the basic rote day-to-day eat healthy stuff. And it actually helps you sleep, and it, you know, stops the cravings. But if you're not emotionally healthy, you're going to have a problem with food.
So who comes to you for help?
Everybody. I get comments and questions and criticisms, right? You know, I get a lot of that too. Everybody's got an issue. Lots of people are sick. I've met seven cancer patients, victims in the last 5 days. Everybody's sick. Everybody knows somebody or is connected. 30% of Canadians over the age of 15 are now obese. That's not even overweight. We're talking obese. So it's widespread. A lot of people don't reach out because they're ashamed or embarrassed. You know, I'm a stranger. I get a lot of messages online, social. Always when I'm out, when people introduce me, oh, my sister needs, or could I maybe get your card? Or everybody's looking for info.
So do people come to you often with one problem and then realize that it's another different problem? Like, will they come to you for help with food, but then realize that they're suffering from depression or anxiety, or how does that work?
Yeah, the people who have got the food thing figured out, because eating is really an act of self-love. If you go and prepare yourself a bowl of lentils and fresh greens on top and you drink a glass of water, that's because you're caring for yourself. If you cram a chocolate bar down your throat and you're running late to a meeting, this is absence of self-love in a way, right?
Sorry, I just realized I hate myself.
Yeah. No, hey, like I'll down a Mars bar in like 2 minutes. But on a regular, you know, day-to-day basis, 3 or 4 times a day, every day, 7 days a week, all year long, 10 years long, you either eat because you're caring for your body or you eat because you're not. You're doing something else. And like I said, most people, they become disconnected to food. A lot of people, they don't even know how to cook anymore. And I learned that when I had my 2 retail pop-ups, because I would speak to every customer. I spoke to 7,000 people in 2 different countries. And I would say probably 70% of them just really don't know how to cook anymore or never learned.
Yeah, I think that's a big piece of it. I think my kids would complain about my cooking. So, okay, that's a little bit hidden,
well,
close to
here,
home there.
I will teach you how to make this soup that I brought you, because that's an easy, cheap meal, and you could live forever on that.
And are you big on things that are easy? Because I think that's a big piece of it. Like, I'm thinking to myself, like, I'll look at something that's all cut up and whatever, and I'm like, oh, that's so expensive to buy that. But then I will... Okay, we're all smelling Susan's soup now.
This soup
smells amazing.
This soup that I brought in is called Gandhi's Bowl. All my food is based on Ayurvedic Indian beliefs in food. And this has 20 ingredients in it. Literally, like I eat it for breakfast. You could eat it all day, every day, a few different flavors. This is food. This is really easy to make. It's very affordable, but a lot of people have never learned how to make a soup. They pull it out of a box, or they put a bunch of water and veg in, and it tastes terrible, and they're like, oh, whatever, I'll heat something up, I'll go take to takeaways, I'll fry something, I'll toast something. They're preparing things, but they don't really know the basics of food.
Is that a huge piece, though? Because I know, like, even when you say that, I think of, like, I don't have time to learn about food. You know what I mean? So it's like, make it easy, make it, and is that where Gojigo came from?
Yes, absolutely.
So tell me about Gojigo.
Well, I was in a drive-thru. I was in a McDonald's drive-thru about to feed, and I did feed the food to my children. And I realized my kid, that 1 and 3, my kids are 1 and 3. I just grabbed me some French fries or something, right, on the way to a play date. And I was like, wow, I haven't been to McDonald's in like 20 years. Here I am in the drive-thru. What am I doing here? And I realized I was short on time. I wasn't there for the food. I was there because the drive-thru is perfect. We love the drive-thru, right? Fast food is the most perfect invention in the world, except for what's in the bag. Right? Everything else is good. The toys, the prices, the convenience, the bathrooms, the artwork. Like, I love it. I love fast food, except what is served. And I was like, this is needed. Like, there's millions and millions of moms like me who are in these drive-thrus, and we're all buying crap. So I set out to change the model, then to change the world.
And what does Gojigo mean?
Okay, so then a couple of weeks later, I was feeding my kids at home on the 16th story of our apartment building, and I had to lug the groceries and all that hassle, not easy, time-consuming. And my son spilled his goji berries all over the counter, and I was feeding my daughter some yams or something, and I was like, I was rushing to get out the door again. And I was like, this is what I need. I just need gojis to go. You know, why can't I buy goji berries in the drive-thru? Why can't I buy yams? Why can't I buy nutritional yeast and healthy food? Why is it always meat and bread and tomatoes and mayonnaise? And I was like, Gojigo, Gojigo. It was kind of catchy. I had come up with a different concept. I wanted to start a food business, and my husband had told me it was really boring, and the brand and the color. And then so I showed him the Gojigo brand architecture, and he's like, good. So I opened the first business in Cape Town.
I mean, that's awesome. And you also call yourself an animal-free food activist. And okay, before I hand you over to Darren, I just want to tell you that I recently got a cat. And this was quite
don't
a big...
Don't eat it.
No, I know. But here's my point. I was kind of like this cat. I've never really had a pet. And this cat is really loving and all these wonderful things, right? And has really become sort of like a part of the family. And it's just interesting to me now that I have this connection with this pet that like some... animals are like family and some animals are like food. So I think, is that sort of the internal shift that needs to happen in somebody where they start to think of animals in a different way? Because I've thought about going animal free so many times, but then I think I'm just mostly lazy or I don't know what to eat.
Yeah, well, yeah. Not lazy. Don't beat yourself up, right? You're busy with it. This is life. And food, that's why Goji was created. We need to create easier fast food. You know, it's a big, huge global need. So the animal-free thing is very big and complicated. And there's lots of different reasons. I didn't come to it for moral reasons, to be honest. I came to it for happiness reasons. I was depressed. So I wasn't trying to not eat animals. I just ended up eating all plants. Because that's where the action is. That's where the nutrients are. And I ended up kind of an accidental vegan. I didn't even know what the word meant until someone called me one because I was so busy cramming plants down my throat to be happy.
And so you don't eat any dairy or any meat, just like tofu and plants. Is that correct?
There's got to be more than tofu and plants in that jar because it smells amazing.
I just have to apologize to all the vegans for what Francis just said.
Sorry.
It's just tofu and plants.
I'm new.
Okay, this is 20 ingredients in it, all plants, plus water, okay, from olives, because it's olive oil, to garam masala, which is kind of like the holy spice of the Indian Ayurveda diet. So just to simplify it, because I think that's really important for people, if you learn to cook, you can learn to make food that doesn't require animals. Okay, so you can basically make all your meals without having any animals, but there's a whole bunch of new food that is animal replacement food. So there is animal-free butter, there's animal-free cheese, there's animal-free sausages. If you want those things to look like that, if you want to have a hot dog, you can have one without animal products. I don't really go for all that stuff. I just eat the plants, but I can cook. So like you said, you know, I got 3 years worth of tips and info and shopping strategies, budgets. It's really affordable to drop animals. Like, we probably save in between $3,000 and $6,000 a year.
Yeah, because that's the connection with the with the animals, not with the animals, but with the food and the money as well. Like, I have noticed that myself in keeping a budget where it's like there's net gains and net losses. And so really you're always gaining if you're eating plants. Like, you can't Like, you basically can't lose, really.
Well, the only thing I think, and I'm happy to say this because I'm so transparent, the only reason why I would think someone actually should continue if they just can't give it up is taste. There's no health reason. There's no economic reason. But if you want to eat the taste of something, there's an animal. then no animal-free product is going to replace that. But by the time you shift into kind of an animal-free lifestyle, you're so past those ideas. You're just onto a whole other level of information. So,
let's talk about that shift, because I grab onto the videos online of, you know, the slaughterhouses and the, you know, the moral standards of the animals and whatnot, and it's like, oh, you know, for a moment I'm like, I'm never eating meat again. Like, this is horrible. I got to make change. But like you said, I'm talking about this habit, this historic habit that is so ingrained and so subconscious of you know, my diet. It's like I can't just make that choice right there, a conscious choice. There's so much more involved, right? So what do you say is the way to shift from animal products to absolutely none? Do you just go cold turkey? Is it a 3-month shift? Like, what?
Well, for you personally, what I would recommend, are you single?
No.
Oh, okay. Find yourself a vegan girlfriend or a vegan boyfriend. Yeah, no, I just say that jokingly. But, well, no, one step at a time, yeah. One choice at a time. Okay, so you're going to eat dinner. Okay, what do you got at home? What are you going to eat for dinner? Do you already know, or what are your choices tonight?
I do have to do a grocery shop for today.
Okay, so what did you eat for dinner last night?
What did I eat for dinner? I had egg toast sandwich.
Okay, so you can buy goat.
The fridge was empty.
They have a newborn.
Yeah.
Well, oh my God, you got to buy food, but you got a new baby in the house. You got to feed it. Okay, so this is one choice. So you can have that exact same meal. You can buy a product by Follow Your Heart, which is a really cool old school hippie company from the 60s down in LA. They make veganaise or veginaise. You can literally buy an egg replacement, because it's not going to look the same. It looks a little different. Mm-hmm. So you could make that on toast with some fried onions and a cup of coffee or beer, whatever you're going to have. You can make that same thing. Or you could throw a can of beans on the toast and, again, add some spinach or something. You're going to get some protein. So it's just a matter of how you got to have the stuff in your pantry. That's why I was talking about the grocery store is the most powerful place in the world. The moment you walk into that store is where you make those choices.
Right.
Just add one plant today. And add one plant tomorrow.
And that's the other difficulty as far as my habits go. I have a habit of going to 3 separate grocery stores.
Most right? people do. That's good.
Because one place doesn't have, you know, this, you know, and the other thing. So there's
always...
So
which ones do you shop at?
I think there's Safeway, and then there's Donald's, and then a local grocery store just around the corner.
Like a little Chinese place?
No.
Like what is it? Like, what brand is it?
It's like a Shop-Easy is what it's called.
Shop-Easy.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so Donald's, awesome produce.
Yeah.
Great grains,
yes.
Tons of good food there,
yes.
Good prices. Safeway, huge organic section now.
Now, yes.
Yeah, very good spice section. They have 36 spices in there, the best prices in town.
I noticed that. And here's the thing, right? Like, because I have, again, I know where to go. I don't like to spend all day in the grocery store, so I'm in and out, right?
Yeah.
And so now we're talking about, okay, I gotta make a list. Mm. I gotta go into the grocery store and I gotta, like, confuse myself entirely. Like, go through a whole different shopping routine, right? But this is... Well, yeah,
well,
like, of course you do.
The easiest thing is to know how to make, say, 5 good meals.
Okay? There you
That's
go.
All you really need, right?
Yeah.
5 good meals, eat out a couple times, cheat a couple times, eat a chocolate bar one night, whatever. If you can feed yourself 5 good meals, you'll feed yourself forever.
Okay. Now,
so you don't have to learn 100 things, you just have to learn a few things.
You mentioned having a partner that's on that same page. What if your partner isn't? Is there a way of hiding the change that you're making?
Yes. There's lots of sneaky tricks I can teach you.
Nice. All right. This is a wealth of information. Now, can people go to your website to sort of, like, find some of this information?
Yeah, so gojigo.ca, gojigo.ca, is static. So there's a bunch of pages there and there's information, but the real gold mine is my Facebook page that I started. There's a Gojigo Facebook page and a Susan Stanfield Spooner Facebook page. Has 3 years of photographs, recipes, tips, strategies. Just go through it all, organize it. I put it there. I do 3 or 4 posts every day. It's really my public offering, a health offering for free for anybody. Send it, share it, whatever. You can always message me. I'm trying to do more things like radio or TV, cooking demonstrations, because literally it is so easy. I have 2 little kids. I don't have time.
Yeah.
And I don't have a huge budget for food either. So I've got I've got like the bomb when it comes to fast, affordable, really delicious food. It's got to taste good. That's the thing. A lot of people, they move into the animal-free thing and they have this awful experience. Like, it's just tofu and plants. Right. And they're like, well, that's not good. And they go back to their, you know, steak or french fries. So it's little changes every day. Tiny little things, but you will save money, you will lose weight, you will be happier, and you will be saving the planet. Those are the big wins. It's worth it.
And did your children factor in on this change?
Well, they were the ones that sucked up all my time.
Yeah.
So I was
due
like,
to that loss of
time. And I produce 84 meals a week, like every mother, right? There's four of us. We eat three times a day. That's 84 meals a week. Everybody's got to have enough protein. Everybody's got to have enough fiber. So I have to have fast, efficient, good ideas, or I really won't be feeding my family properly. And everybody is in that same boat, especially parents, right?
Right. So, I mean, basically, we're addicted to the foods that we're currently eating.
Some of them we technically are. Like, cheese has a protein called casein that has the same effect on dopamine as heroin does.
Yeah.
So there is that. There's that stuff going on. Same with sugar. And that's in all the animal foods. There's a lot of chemicals that we're addicted to. We're addicted to the sight of food or smell of food. You know, anybody who walks into a fast food place or a pizza place, a hot pizza place, that's affecting your senses, your sight, your smell.
Yeah.
But the good news is the more kind of food like this you eat, you can quell those cravings and you can move away from food addiction.
Right. But it is going to be like no change like this is easy and comfortable and convenient. I mean, it's going to take
it is easy.
A little stamina, though.
You know what it really is? It's whether you're at the start line or not. You know, are you ready or not?
So you mentioned that emotional instability that's there to help fuel your choices or your negative choices or your unhealthy choices.
Well, and I think it's what you guys are experts at, right? Why I really wanted to come here. It's like somebody's at that. It's that day. Today is the day to stop.
So let's say there's like, you know, someone's eating, they're listening to the show, they want to make change, but they got a lot of unresolved issues going on. Are they going to set themselves up for failure? Like, do we talk about the, you know, therapy or counseling or something else to add to this change that they're going to make?
Yeah, both. And I have had people cry in front of me in my restaurants because they actually just really need therapy. But you can do it. No, seriously.
Yeah,
I don't want to eat healthy. Oh, no, I want to lose weight. Oh, my God, my childhood was terrible. It is. It's all there. But you can do the two together. If you eat a bowl of grains and lentils and fresh food, you're going to calm your anxiety. So you are less likely maybe to make a poor choice around a substance. Vice versa. You go to therapy, you're probably going to go, you know what, I'm going to go have a salad. I'm not going to go jack myself up on pizza and Coke.
Right.
So I would say they're hand in hand and just make a tiny little choice every day, a tiny little choice this week. Give yourself a year. It took me 2 years to turn my food and depression and health habits around because, you know, you got to do other stuff, right? You got to go to work and raise your kids and go to the bathroom and life gets in the way and you make mistakes. So give yourself time and love yourself. You know, realize that act of eating is an act of self-love and self-care and love and care for others if we're feeding others.
Yeah, and that's something you say when you said it. I mean, it's so true. Like, again, it's one of those, of course, right? That's why we do that. And yet, it's just like I'm going through my head like how often I don't take care of myself,
well, you
or
can
I'm not loving
Facebook
myself.
Me anytime, you know what and I'll mean? Get you on track.
and it's just there's so must be so many people that could get such a like a slight little bit of self respect change and self motivation just by, you know, changing the food that they eat.
Yeah.
So gojigo.ca, check it out. Where are you mentioned pop-ups. Where are your stores?
Okay, well, I don't have any right now. My first one was outside Cape Town, where we lived, and then we moved home, and our second was in Gibson's, BC, in the Sunshine Coast, where we lived. And everybody loved the food, but it was just too small a town and kind of the wrong side of the building. So we're not going to do the retail in Vancouver because the lease rates, it's just not affordable. There's no food margins anymore, as we all know. There's so many for lease signs, so I may do a grocery line. But I have these two great books that I was hoping to give away. I brought them as gifts. Okay, one is called Whitewash. It's by a new gal that I've become friends with named Carrie Gillum. She's a Kansas former Reuters investigative journalist. This book is awesome. The second book is by Jane Goodall, who is one of my absolute fave heroes, seeds of hope. And I brought this because there is so many reasons to hope, to have hope. You know, even if you don't think you have hope today, you're listening on the radio and you're like, oh, I've got this crappy life and I don't have any money and I've got this terrible food in my closet. You can go to the store and buy an apple and spend a dollar and eat your apple. And that's a reason to have hope. And there's always hope. So I want to give these books away. You guys tell me how to do that with people in their comments.
Yeah,
I will get them to the people.
Leave your name in the comment section of this video and share it. And we will put you in the draw to win both of those books.
Thanks for having me.
That was awesome. Thanks, Susan Stanfield from GoGigo. We are going to go on a break and stay tuned for a personal story from Krista S. coming up after the song break. You're listening to Talk Recovery on Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM. And we're going to start with a little Hunger Strike, Temple of the Dog.
Nice.
Radio coming to you live from Vancouver downtown's east side. Where's my headphones? There they are. I'm like I love hearing myself talk, so if I could do it in two-dimensional, that would be fantastic. So we just finished talking about food addiction and food recovery, which is awesome. Thank you very much for being our guest. Susan's still in our studio here. And we come to you live every Thursday from the Downtown East Side. And what we do is we try to bring some personal stories of recovery to the airways. So we're really excited to have Krista with us.
Hi.
Hi, Krista. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Excellent. I'm doing good. Thanks for. What do you think of our show so far?
I love it. I love this.
Nice.
Yeah, she's working for the show too, doing some filming for us.
Yeah, she's doing some filming for us and everything. So that is awesome. So, personal story, we like to talk about recovery and what your story is. So why don't we like to call it lived experience as well.
Ooh.
And so we thought we'd bring you on the show, and thanks for letting us get a little bit of insight of what your lived experience is. So without going into too much details about your past, but you know, where did it start? No, I'm kidding. So how did you end up here?
Well, it's been a long journey, a lot of life experience. I'd have to say that it did start as a child, though. I was kind of raised in a family of addicts. I had a dad who was Canada's most wanted, so we were like constantly traveling. There was a lot of crime involved. I had a lot of disorders as a child. I was kind of like left to my own devices, and that just kind of like progressed as I got older. You know, like needing the validation. There was a lot of abuse mixed in with there. I ended up running away from home and getting involved in the foster care system. And then from there, it was just all downhill. I had moments of clarity where I could try and, like, because I always wanted to do something better, like, I wanted than what I was kind of like born into, but I just didn't know how to do it. So, what I was most comfortable in was chaos. So I surrounded myself with a lot of people who reminded me of my parental figures. It just so happened to be a lot of like gangs and a lot of crime that I was involved in, a lot of the party scene. I was in Prince George at the time. My father went to prison for a life sentence, and I moved to Kelowna, where things just even got worse than they've ever been. And then so the last 10 years, I really couldn't tell you what I've been up to. It just, like, there was violence, crime, excessive amounts of using. By the time, and then I got into a relationship for that lasted 10 years, and this relationship was very, very toxic. There was so much abuse involved without, like, traumatizing anyone. You know, there was a lot of hospital trips and a lot of isolating. And so all of a sudden, me being a girl who needed to be in the spotlight to feel wanted would be hiding in my penthouse on the golf course alone and severely injured and hooked on what ended up being fentanyl. Because in the hospitals, you know, they were giving me pain medications that just weren't working anymore. And so, you know, moving on to the next big thing in my mind.
How long did you do fentanyl for?
About 6 or 7 years.
6 or 7 years,
yes.
Wow.
And this is kind of before the fentanyl crisis.
So you knew fentanyl was bad for you?
Yeah, I did.
So, because, I mean, we look at you today, and there's some people out there, you read social media feeds, it's like, why would you do fentanyl? Like, why? So what was it that got you to, like, keep going to the hospital and keep wanting to do fentanyl and so forth? Like, was it, like, what is it that, before you even know what addiction is, like, what was it that was keeping you going to doing the same thing to keep yourself in
the insanity piece?
Yeah.
Well, to be honest, the first time I used it, I didn't have any connection with, like, heroin to fentanyl. Like, so I knew, like, the bad things that were associated with that, but I didn't realize that this was even worse. And so when I did it raw off the street, I wasn't in pain anymore. All of a sudden, like, I've been diagnosed with obsessive compulsive disorder. And so, like, kind of, like, put it into check without the medication that I'm currently on now. Like, it just kind of, like, put everything into place for me. My mood was stabilized. I felt invincible. I didn't feel like a victim anymore. It made me functioning. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I felt like I found a miracle drug.
Did you consider yourself a substance user, an addict? Did you during that time?
At the time, I've always known that I have had an addictive personality. You know, like, I do believe that it comes through your family. And there was a lot of awareness around, like, 12-step programs and stuff for myself.
Yeah.
But I was in complete denial.
Yeah, like you didn't relate to the people down here.
Absolutely not. No.
Because you're in a penthouse doing the same drugs, but you're in nicer clothes and so forth.
And working in an office as well in a Skyrise in Kelowna. So, like, you know, it takes all people.
So what was the thing that got you to change?
I couldn't do it anymore. You know, like, I really believe, like, I wanted change throughout the years, but it just got to the point where I absolutely had nowhere else to go. Like, I was backed right into a wall. I knew that my physical health was dwindling. It was really, really hard to keep these walls up, to pay my rent. Like, the smallest tasks were becoming alarming. You know, I would, the daily grind of, like, wondering how I'm going to get what I need, like, my medicine in quotations. It ended up taking me to, like, you know, like, worst parts of town, like, such as the one that's outside, you know, to, like, pick up. And my associations changed. The lies started to get too big. And also, like, I was dying. My mental health was gone. I was brain injured, like, brain damaged. I didn't actually think that I would come back to 100%. So that basically, I knew something drastic had to change. I hatched a plan with one of my friends for me to get out of that situation, get myself into a detox facility. I had family on board. They were all very afraid of my lifestyle, mind you. So this was all up to me. Nobody else could make this change for me. A lot of people have tried to help me throughout the years, and I had burnt bridges everywhere I went. Like, nobody could trust me because I would always just go back. Right.
How many times did you try to get well? Like, are you like a 5-time treatment person? Are you a 1-time treatment person?
I'm a 1-time treatment person. However, I didn't have the education around it at the time. I was thinking that detox was treatment. So, you know, you go to detox, you get off of it, you start feeling a little bit better. And then you get out in the real world.
You're treated.
Yeah, you're cured. Everything's fine. Everything's great. You know, and like they'll tell you to get a DNA counselor and they'll tell you to go to meetings and stuff like that, which is great. Don't get me wrong. But I really didn't want to look at myself. And that was something that I knew I was going to have to do in order to actually make a huge change. Like they tell you to change people, places, and things. You have to change everything, your associations. For me, like moving out of Kelowna and coming to New Westminster was like, it was a blessing. I didn't realize the doors that were open up to me until I got here. And I haven't looked back.
So we started off the show a little bit about medication-assisted therapy. Mm-hmm. So you're an opiate addict, you're a fentanyl user. You know, what do you think about the comments? A lot of people think that you should be on opiate replacement therapy for 2 to 3 to 4 years.
Mm. Yeah.
How does that make you feel?
You know, I'm pretty twisted inside about it. Like, I know that everyone has some very strong core beliefs about it. Personally, I'm going to use my own personal experience. When I went on methadone or Suboxone, tapering of any sort, or even just going on to a program of that sort, like, I didn't stop using. Because what it told me in my addict brain was that I could maybe use successfully, that I would have like a crutch to fall on so I wouldn't get dope sick. Or, you know, like, because you're so afraid of coming off the opiate because of the physical and the mental symptoms that come along with that, that you don't know how, you can't comprehend that a life without any of that, you know, that freedom. So with this time when I went into detox about 14 months ago, I refused, like Suboxone was just coming in to the facilities and I refused. I refused it and I was in there for 10 days and that was a lot longer than the people who were getting put on it. But I am so grateful that I did that because it has been a one-time straight up treatment thing. I did end up going to the Westminster House and I had already had 3 months clean. And you know, like after the care around that was another journey in itself, but it was really hard in the beginning. Don't get me wrong. Like it's not easy to get off something like that cold turkey, but I did it, you know, and it, that cliche saying that this too shall pass. I kept repeating that to myself over and over and over again. And yeah, it did pass and I'm free.
Can you access what was different at that time where you had the motivation to quit cold turkey?
I just was done. I was actually done. Like there was a part of me that when I went to detox before and I did do the tapering or I did go on like a program, I wasn't done. You know, I just knew that I was getting, like, sicker faster. It was extremely expensive. My family was getting involved. My friends were starting to notice that I was dwindling. My career was affected. But I wasn't ready. Like, I don't feel like it gives people a good message to put them on that, because you're just replacing one with the other. And I feel strongly about that. And I was warned to be careful with my words by people in the community. However, like, I have lived through it on both sides. I've abused methadone. Like, I've abused Suboxone. Like, they can be abused.
Well, no one can take your lived experience away.
Right.
I mean, I believe that we deserve equal access to
Absolutely.
All forms of treatment and freedom of choice, but I mm-hmm. also believe in giving people the clear options.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're a physician in British Columbia or you're a nurse in British Columbia and you have an opioid addiction, you get sent to a private treatment center, you get abstinence-based treatment, and you go back to work. But if you're below the poverty line or kind of like,
yeah.
you know, not knowing or have that support, we call mm-hmm. it recovery capital. Well, you just take medication for the rest of your life. And there's so much discrimination in the healthcare system in, mm-hmm. in Canada. And I think until we combat that discrimination, depending on your value of worth,
yeah.
then we will never get over this overdose crisis. So there's moms listening to the show. There's women, you know, who may be struggling today. And if you're on an opiate replacement therapy, like, this isn't to say that your recovery doesn't matter.
No,
like, your recovery matters. This is just Krista's story,
mm-hmm.
and we need to listen to all stories.
Mm-hmm.
What do you... So, you know, some woman comes to you and needs to... Like, how do you inspire someone to get well?
If there's anything I could say to anyone who may pick this up, like, there's so little education around this cycle of abuse, and you know, like, getting educated, getting help, reaching out, not lying for your partner. I had so much shame around it. Like, I felt like I was the problem. I felt like I deserved all this stuff to happen to me. So I constantly just, like, let it continue. And that did emulate from my childhood as well, was that shame and guilt. And, like, get help, reach out. Like, we have so many, we're access to so many different outlets that we can reach out to and, like, get pulled out of a situation. I mean, if you want something to be different, you actually have to do it. You can't get anyone to do it for you. But talking about it, reaching out for help, knowing that you're going to be safe, but you have to be willing to walk away. And I did. I actually walked away with just the clothes on my back, and I left everything behind. And it wasn't easy to be in, like, detox with, like, one pair of pajama pants. Trust me, it wasn't pretty.
So you say do it.
Just
if you want to do it.
Okay,
so
just
somebody
do it.
That's listening, they don't know what that means. So
okay.
what is doing the do, as we say? What is doing it? What do you do today to stay clean?
To stay clean? Oh, there's so many different things. Like, I'm more of a, like, a maintenance kind of thing now. My first year was a little different. You know, I went to counseling. I did a lot of work around trauma. I went to a 12-step program. I got a sponsor. I involved myself in the community as soon as I could. I started performing right away. You know, and then I kind of brought that here to New West too. Like, there's so many different things that you can get involved in, like, extra activities to, like, meet people. We have a choir at the house that I went through and I currently work at, and it's kind of, like, open to everybody, recovering community. That's kind of a little hidden secret at the moment, but anyone can come, and you know, like, we actually do, like, a choir structure. And people learn about music, and it's a really good outlet. There's so many different things, you know. There's sports teams. There's so many events, like, even conferences. Like, the doors that open up to a person once they close that old life behind, it's just I can't describe to you how awesome life is. It's awesome, and it's gonna be a bit of a journey, and that's the beauty of it. You don't really think about that. You think about the end result, right, as you're going through it. But yeah, so. Get your butt to a meeting and find women that you can relate to, right?
Now, there was you mentioned, you know, the importance of talking about it, and I think, you know, as you were describing, you know, your family dynamic, you know, your childhood, foster care, things like that, a lot of people get stuck on, like, this is why I am the way I am.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And like, okay, so it may have a huge influence on your belief systems, on your values, like you said, this sort of what you want to have around you, mm-hmm. on so many levels. Like, when did you realize that you can't change that? That it's sort of like you just have to accept it, don't you?
Yeah, you do. Acceptance. That's a huge practice.
When did you? Like, because that takes some maturity in the brain. You know what I mean? Like, but people want to get into it right off the bat. They still might be detoxing. They still might be, you know, you just need to eat a sandwich, you know, like, and get some nutrition and get some exercise, get the blood flowing again. Mm-hmm. Like, when was it for you where you started to have that sort of sense of acceptance?
I've kind of accepted. I was about 17 when I first started accepting what was going on. I didn't know what life without chaos looked like. I didn't know, but there was something inside of me that knew there was another way. I mean, you look at people who have like families and like they can go to their daily jobs and they don't have these problems.
Right.
And it's like, why can't I have that?
That's what you think.
Yeah.
That they don't have these problems.
Well, that's what you think because it looks so picturesque.
If I just had that, my life would have been different.
Right.
I wouldn't be dealing with this right now.
But I wasn't like, you can't feel sorry for yourself because you're not going to get anywhere.
So did you meet women in the treatment center that had these loving families that are sitting
absolutely.
In the same boat as you are in that moment?
I did meet a lot of people who had a lot of similar experiences. You know, we came from all different experiences, but the feelings and the emotions are all the same.
Yeah.
And, you know, like addiction is a family disease. So it does affect everybody and however it affects you, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But like you keep your eye on the prize and you stay focused on recovery. Like recovery, it's changed my life. It's changed my family's life. You know, like fortunately today I have parents that I actually look up to and they're on the program as well. And,
right
you know, and they're doing recovery and then I have family members who are still in addiction, but they are, you know, like they're following
yeah.
me, right?
Yeah.
As they followed me into the fire, they'll follow me out. And
yeah.
that's a beautiful thing. And we can only keep what we have by giving it away to other people. So, like, I have a purpose today, and it keeps me going. It gets me out of bed. It gets me motivated. It makes me tickled to be in places like this with you guys, watching you guys do such amazing things, you know?
Well, your living experience now, just as you speak out loud, as you talk about your experience, I think Susan at the beginning of the show, you know, mentioned a similar story where it's like as soon as you start talking about your stuff that you've been ashamed about
yeah.
or wanted to keep secret and, you know, didn't feel like you had the ability to share what's going on, like then other people start opening up.
Absolutely,
and you know what I mean. And I think that like we can go to doctors and we can you know search for all of these answers for somebody to fix us, but there's so much importance in that. I mean, you still need to have a safe, healthy environment to open up and have that
yes.
that story time. But it's not like I couldn't imagine walking into a doctor's office or a clinic, sitting down and saying like, "Here's my life story," and him really caring enough to start sharing about himself and a connection to be made. It's just going to be like, here's a script and, you know, good luck with life.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's important to know, you know, that there are spaces out there where you can meet other people that had a different upbringing, that had the same upbringing, and that story can start being told without that same level of shame attached
yeah.
to it. Hey?
Yeah. Agreed.
And I mean, I think that's why, like, this part of, you know, our show, the personal stories, it's such an impact, you know, that we don't even know. Like, we couldn't, like, you know, quantitatively measure what's changing out there for people when someone shares a story, but
we're changing the world.
Yes, you guys are.
We're changing the
yeah.
world, yes.
Yeah.
There's a lot of shows about addiction. There's a lot of books about addiction. There's a lot of conversations about addiction.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, there's not a lot of conversations about recovery, and this is one of
now
those.
There is.
This
and,
is one of those opportunities
Krista,
to talk about
Krista
recovery.
Krista would be the ideal candidate for long-term opioid replacement therapy.
Well, yeah, she would be like not even just a candidate. It's almost like you have to be on it.
Yes,
yeah,
and that's what was told to me.
So,
as well.
You know, Krista, did you know like if you went to certain treatment centers in Canada, we won't name them right now, And even certain detox centers, you would have to sign a medication contract that says you will take your Suboxone while you're in this facility. You won't ask what the merits of Suboxone are while you're in this facility, and you will not ask the physician to taper off Suboxone while you're in this facility. Did you know that?
I've heard rumors about
that. Did you know that on Facebook? Yes.
I've
so, Krista, you would have to sign that contract. Can you imagine signing a contract saying you can't ask any questions about your medication?
Yeah, I like having choice in life, you know? Yeah.
But you got to admit, the time that you're making that choice, like, you're not...
You're not all there.
Right?
You are sick.
And it's a very sensitive time that you would allow someone to make that type of choice in that time of their life where, like you said it, you didn't even know if you were going to be able to come back.
Right.
You know, from that. So, like... Yeah, I mean, some professionals need to take responsibility into, you know, finding out what's that person's next step. Do they have a safe place to go? Can we put them on, you know, something that's going to get them there? You know, I mean, it's just that's, I think, the lack of insight into that person's story and what's going on next is the missing piece.
Thank you so much for being on our show.
Yeah, absolutely.
We really appreciate it. If you like what you hear, you can go to facebook.com/talkrecoveryvancouver, and we're on iTunes, we're on SoundCloud, talkrecoveryradio.com is our website. Pleasure to have you here.
Thank you.
Thanks for sharing your story, and thanks to Susan Stanfield Spooner from Goji Go sharing that story. And stay tuned for those books that we're giving away. Check it out on our Facebook page. Stay tuned for World Poetry Cafe. This is Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM, and we are going to leave with Victims of Life, the Avett Brothers. Beauty.
Victims of psychos. Victims of life. Victims are wrong, victims are right, victims of anything and all the above, victims of hate, victims of love, victims of hate, victims of love. If you're rich, you're hungry for money. If you're broke, you're hungry for bread. If you're wild, victims of psychos, victims of life, victims are wrong, victims are right, victims of winning, victims of loss, victims of payment, victims of cause. You got your victims of violence, victims of peace. You are all victims, exactly like me. Victims of anything.
giving